This podcast is brought to you by Legend Comics and Coffee in Omaha, Nebraska, located in scenic downtown Benson. They got a new location. It's absolutely gorgeous. Check it out. And by listeners like you. Go to Patreon.com/Two-Headed Nerd. Become a patron. Support this show.
Once, they were two best friends managing a comic book store. But when an innocent blood oath went wrong, the two found themselves trapped in the same body, imprisoned in a strange pyramid made of long boxes, buried deep below their hometown, where they are doomed to discuss comic books until the end of time. They were once Joe and Matt. Now they are known as the Two-Headed Nerd. And this is their podcast.
Broadcasting from the Ziggurat at Omaha in caverns deep below the metro area, it is our pleasure to welcome you to another Back Issue Show, episode 796 of the Two-Headed Nerd Comic Book Podcast. I'm your head number one, the Internet's Joe Patrick. Matt, it's been a long time since I took a math class, but I think that means we are six episodes away from episode 800.
I can't possibly be right. I'm your head number two. My name is Matt Baum, and it's time for another Back Issue Show, where we'll re-enter now the Age of Apocalypse to finish our deep dive into the spin-offs of the 30-year-old X event to compare it to its modern-day counterpart. I'm going to call it the infamous Age of Revelation. It's infamous by now, right?
I don't know if it's infamous. I don't want to give it that much credit.
Well, I mean, infamous means famous for the wrong reasons, right?
I mean, I guess.
Yeah, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
If you're a patron, be sure to check out our deep dive on all the number one issues we did for AOR. You only have to pay a dollar. It costs like nothing. You know why? We're bad capitalists, folks. We're bad at it.
In this episode, Matt and I continue our deep dive into all of the Age of Apocalypse first issue. I guess they're tie-ins, yeah, but really they're just tie-ins. First issues.
Yeah.
And hey, listeners, you might want to brace yourselves because this is where things get wild. When last we met, we ended with Fabian Nicieza and Tony Daniels' Gambit and the Externals, which makes the next stop on our alphabetical magical mystery tour of the Age of Apocalypse, Generation Next number one. Get ready for some truly bonkers Chris Bacalo artwork, a one-handed Wolverine and his short-haired, dangerously attractive girlfriend Jean Grey, the strangest spelling of Excalibur you're ever gonna see, and a hotter-than-expected, surprisingly shirtless Cable that absolutely no one was prepared for. Once again, I really wish you would stop attributing sexy time qualities to these characters.
Tell me this, Nate.
It makes me profoundly uncomfortable.
Tell me Nate Gray's not sexy. He's so good. I'm used to gruff old Cable. Like, I don't want to make out with that dude. He's old.
Nate Gray is like 3 years old, technically speaking.
You want to cuddle up with that robot arm? I mean, gross.
Macho, fire up the portal back to the Age of Apocalypse. It's Back Issue Review time in the Ziggurat.
I'm afraid we don't have that kind of portal available. But I could make a funny noise as I fetch you the rest of your Age of Apocalypse comics, if need be. How was that?
That'll work, Macho. Thank you. Let's move on to what I remember being my favorite of these books, and that is Generation Next, number one. Yes. Now, like you said, Generation X is what it replaced, four issues deep. And you know, Scott Lobdell and Chris Bacalo, who came up with the book, came to Marvel. They're like, we got a new team. They're young. They're spry. We're going to do a new team of mutants. We're super excited about it. We've got 24 issues penned out. It's this awesome story, and it's going to be so great. And Marvel is like, we love it. By the way, we're going to interrupt your story. I don't know. When did you say you want to start this? Okay, we're going to interrupt it with issue four.
Issue four. You get four good ones and then.
Oh, my God. I feel so bad.
Like there are things that are. So I'm just going to start talking about the characters here real quick.
Well, hold on. Let me finish the.
Please.
Inks by Mark Buckingham. So this is your team, Chris Bacalo and Mark Buckingham. are the main.
It's unstoppable, really.
Oh,
it's
my God.
It's a colossal art team.
Yes. Steve Buccioletto and Richard Starkings is on your letters. So let's get into it. Your cast is the same exact cast. Chamber, Husk, Mondo, Vincente, and Skin. Chamber, as if you don't know.
Vincente does not exist outside of this.
No. He is only here. Chamber was a guy who could project his mutant abilities as like an explosion from his body, but it also destroyed his body when he used it. Here,
he had psychic powers that were so strong that when they manifested, it blew a hole through his chest.
Right.
And that's why we have Chamber as like the guy whose whole upper half is on fire.
Right. Here, he looks way better and he's wearing kind of a sex rig, sort of a bondage device.
Like a containment suit. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
But it's got a cannon on his chest where he can channel his firepower.
So he only blew out part of his chest and now he has to wear that thing and the upper part of him is just fine.
Or they got to him before things went really bad, I guess, you know, or something.
Who knows? Yeah. Lines. I don't know.
Not important. Kitty and Colossus are your teachers here, but Kitty, you're going to have trouble recognizing because she's got short hair. She's wearing a blue metal leotard with long sleeves, but more importantly, she has Wolverine claws.
Well, but also she has blonde hair.
Yeah, she's kind of sandy blonde. I'll say that. But regardless
of
that.
Short blonde hair. Yeah.
I think the Wolverine claws are a little, will throw you a little more. So.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if they explain why she has those later on in the series. I don't recall
if they did. I don't know. But wait, I know she's upset because Wolverine, as we'll find out, bad guy. But maybe it has something to do with that. I don't recall. Colossus wearing a do-rag. And I would argue.
Yeah.
It's totally awesome.
It works for him. Dude looks badass.
Why he is wearing elbow pads and forearm guards, I don't know, because you're made of metal. And
I don't know. He's got knee pads in his normal costume.
Seems kind of silly to me, like when the Hulk puts on fingerless gloves. Like, what are we protecting
Matt, he's
here,
fashion forward. He's got to look like a badass if he's going to go into battle.
I guess. But this Kitty and this Colossus are probably like two of the biggest departures I can think of from their characters in the regular Marvel universe.
I also think that aside from one-armed Wolverine or one-handed Wolverine, they are probably two of the most iconic Age of Apocalypse characters.
Probably. But they are not Professor X type teachers.
Hell
to
no.
These students. They are military drill instructors. And it kind of seems like they hate the students.
It also seems like if the students had succeeded and some of them were murdered, that's just how it goes because that's how training is.
Right.
I think the students are actively trying to murder one another.
It kind of seems like it. And the teachers are actively trying to murder the students and encouraging the students to murder each other.
Yeah, because war is hell, Matt.
War is hell. And yeah, if you're going to survive in Apocalypse's world, it's going to be tough. And so this whole book, almost the entire first issue is a training exercise where we meet Paige Guthrie, Husk, who is, as we talked about, Cannonball's other sister that does have powers. Same powers here. A better looking Chamber, and Paige and Chamber, they're into it. They, you know, they want to kiss on each other or whatever, which is cute because Chamber in the regular book is kind of a sad story. Like he was a really good looking guy and he's smart.
But they have like a cute like teenage relationship as well.
They do,
book.
But they can't really, it's sort of a rogue.
They can't do anything about
thing.
It. Right.
They can't do much about it. Mondo here is amazing. Oh my
God. So Mondo is the character I wanted to talk about the most because, when you read Generation X 1-4, they start talking about this guy Mondo and they're like, what's Mondo? And nobody truly understands what Mondo is or who he is or where he comes from. Just that he's at the school.
Right.
And you don't ever really learn anything about Mondo until it's revealed, spoilers for 2 years later, that he is a traitor under the control of Black Tom Cassidy. And so Mondo was essentially sent to infiltrate the Massachusetts Academy, which was, I guess, renamed the Xavier Institute, right?
Right, right.
And so, he was a bad guy the whole time. But by issue 4, Nothing had been done with Mondo. He just shows up in a Hawaiian shirt, blowing weird bubbles. His whole deal is that he's like the absorbing man, but with the environment.
And if the more he absorbs, the dumber he gets, right? The bigger he gets?
No, I don't think that's true. No, I think he just talks in the third person because he's being funny or ironic.
Oh, okay. He's like Bad Luck.
Yeah, Lula. No.
From the same cartoon.
He's like, he takes on the characteristics of the environment around him. So, he's weird. He's very poorly or very vaguely explained. And so by the time he's here, a major character on the team in this book, readers would not have known what the fuck Mondo's deal was.
Well, you barely know any of these characters. We're four issues in Generation X. So,
I mean, other than Kitty and right.
Yeah. Right. But Mondo is a great excuse for Chris Bacalo to draw entire panel filling like splash pages.
Yeah, that's rad.
Of this insane character with like stuff sticking out of him and earth flying off of him. This book looks better than 99% of the comics I have ever seen. Like, it is so incredible. I love this art.
It's kind of unfair that Chris Bacalo is only one man.
Yeah, truly. I would love, and he would go on to draw a lot of X stuff, and it's great. It's all great. And he goes on to draw a bunch of amazing Spider-Man stuff, and he gets to a point where we were like, Chris, I think you're slipping too far to the other side. Can you please come back?
It's like he was merging with the Matrix and becoming part of the machine code. It's like, no, pull him back. This panel where Husk morphs into like this weird acid and tries to kill Colossus is incredible.
It's amazing.
It's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. I love Colossus about to like just yeet the chamber out of existence. Great. The book looks incredible, but we just get to the story. So big training thing. We're introduced to asshole Kitty and asshole Colossus and their young spry team. Magneto shows up and he's like, hey, Colossus, unlike your Marvel 616 character, you really care about your sister Magic a lot, which is a joke. Obviously, Colossus is always upset about his sister and something is going on with her.
He thinks that she was dead. He thought she was dead.
And it's one of the reasons he's such an asshole. He finds out she's alive. She's being held in this core in Seattle. You and your team of kids who are definitely not ready. Another trope. Right. Young X team. They're not ready.
Yeah.
They're not ready for the war. But Colossus is like, they're as ready as they're going to be. We're going. And Kitty full on understands there's a good chance all these kids are going to die. But
hey, Colossus, Matt, you know who's a teleporter? Magic.
We need a teleporter. We don't have one of the teams.
Yeah,
we literally got to get on a plane and go to Seattle to get her.
It's like having to fly cross country to pick up a new car that you then have to drive home.
Sure. But again, good mission, great looking book, just an incredible.
Oh, God, it looks
comic
cool.
Comic book. Oh, I love this one. It's a massive.
This is Chris Bacalo fresh out of Vertigo.
Yeah.
The last thing he drew before this was Shade the fucking Changing Man. Okay.
True.
And so, this book is dark and weird and kind of gross and it's so good. This is a buy-in for me.
Love it. Somehow darker than the next book we're going to talk about that features Wolverine as a bad guy. Yeah. Weapon X, number one.
I don't think he's a bad guy. I think he's a freedom fighter, sort of.
I don't think he's a... I mean, yeah, I guess.
We'll get into it. We'll get into it. Set up the story. We'll debate.
He's not on the same side. We can agree with that.
He's right? Not on the side of the X-Men. Yeah. That is true.
This is Larry Hama, Adam Kubert, the other Kubert brother. Who are your team on Wolverine at the time? This is obviously replacing Wolverine. Dan Green is your inker, along with Chris Warner and Carl Kessel. We needed three inkers for this one. And if you look at the book...
Yeah, because Adam Kubert cannot be contained.
You will understand why. Yeah, Adam Kubert, again, he looked at his brother going full Kubert and went, hold my beer.
So many lines. There are so many lines.
Weird like points of view. And so he was moving like protractors all over the place to draw these panels.
The way the panels are layered on top of each other, it's really awesome.
Totally insane. So we got Weapon X, who is obviously Logan. Jean Grey. Powerful telepath and telekinetic, acting as Logan's partner, but they're not just partners.
And they're in Lerv.
And then guess what? Got a teleporter on the team. Gateway's here.
Yeah, Gateway. I love Gateway.
Gotta have Gateway. So as wackadoo as Chris Buckle's book looks, there's something about Kubert's art here that's just even more insane. And it's the way that he draws Wolverine's hair.
Yeah.
Wolverine has never been more disheveled than this. It's crazy how he looks.
He's very feral.
Very. Right? Yeah.
He's much less put together than the Wolverine we're used to seeing.
This would be post-dog Wolverine, right?
No, pre-dog Wolverine. Pre-dog Wolverine.
Okay, pre-dog Wolverine. Now, the thing we should mention, the major change for the character is not just that he's not wearing his normal Wolverine costume. He's only got one hand.
Yeah, Cyclops blasted off his other hand.
Something, yeah, we've learned that Cyclops blasted off his left hand. He's only got a right hand, but later we'll learn the claws are still there. It's the best moment. It's so great.
It's a great moment.
Oh, my God.
It's probably the best, like, page turn reveal in the entire event.
And this one, like,
is Weapon X's claws coming out of that stump.
Oh, my God. It's so great. Everybody else is on a mission, like, from Magneto. Wolverine. Nah, man. Wolverine's doing Wolverine stuff. He's on his own mission.
Well, they are working with the human resistance in England. So they are working with Moira McTaggart and Brian Braddock and the European human resistance. And so this is what I mentioned earlier. Like, in this book, something happens where they shove Havoc into a teleporter with a sentinel hand.
Right.
And when you see him in another book, probably Factor X is my guess.
Factor X. He talks.
They talk about how Dark Beast had to, like, cut that sentinel hand out of his body.
They're like, are you feeling better after the accident?
The books are referencing one another a little bit.
Yeah, no, definitely. So they are working, like you said, for the Human High Council, who's trying to get a bunch of refugees out of here, and we need a teleporter to do that, so gotta go get Gateway to help teleport all these people. They are working for Bolivar Trask, who runs your High Human Council. Bad guy.
Well, dude's the guy that makes the Sentinels.
Yeah, there you go. And that's
so all the badass Sentinels you see flying around, that's because of him.
And that's why Wolverine surfs on one.
I know, it's so rad. They ride him like a truck.
This book is, but like, it just hits the ground running, full on mission. Wolverine surfing on a Sentinel, flying, fighting weird tentacle robot monsters and shit. This book is insane.
This is a guy that looks like, he looks kind of like Abyss, but it's not Abyss.
No.
But it's very Abyss adjacent.
Right.
And with the color scheme, the kind of tentacle purple looking. He refers to him as a Balrog class meta cyborg.
Whatever the hell that means. What we learn in this book, though, is that Wolverine and Jean—it's
just something cobbled together by Sinister, is what it says.
Thing, and then
you got Emma Frost is here, but she's been lobotomized, so she doesn't have psychic powers.
She's a mess.
Yikes!
Magma shows up and attacks, and she is definitely not a good girl. She's working for Lord Apocalypse, and she looks stupid. I do not like this Magma design.
I mean, yeah, kind of. Yeah.
She does not look good. But they also kind of make it look like she's not going to be a problem very long, because the book ends with her, getting snicked.
He guts her, yeah.
I love this book.
And
I love this book.
I love this book, too. And so they say that, you know, you've got to go on this mission, but secretly we are orchestrating this thing called Project Scorched Earth, which means we're just going to wipe America off the map because we can't chance Apocalypse spreading his rule.
Sure.
And so, you know, Wolverine is not really down with genocide. This comic book looks so great.
It's awesome.
I know we talked about it a little bit.
It's just awesome.
But I want to single out one thing in particular. There's a splash page where Wolverine and Jean are escaping and they're going to the Big Ben where the humans are. And you see this whole fleet of Sentinels evacuating human refugees from the United States.
So amazing.
It is such a well-drawn page. Also, this book features rocket fists, yep, which is my number one favorite superpower.
Yeah, like if you were reading Wolverine, you're going to feel right at home. This is like Larry Hama's globe-trotting superhero, like what if 007 was a maniac, I guess, from
sure.
This stuff is great. I love this book. It's a huge buy it.
This is fantastic.
We mentioned his name earlier, but next up is Excalibur number one, or Excalibre, if you will, written by Warren Ellis, penciled by Ken Lashley and Phil Moy, inked by Bud LaRosa and Tom Wergson, colorist Joe Rosas and Digital Chameleon, and your letters once again by Richard Starkings.
I do want to say, I think as much as I enjoy the Ken Lashley, I think that they cruelly teased us with this Carlos Pacheco cover.
They did. The cover's amazing. And this is, it's about goddamn time.
He was the regular on again, off again artist of Excalibur at the time, Carlos Pacheco was.
And it's about goddamn time Nightcrawler shows up, who played a major part in Excalibur at the time. This is sort of it's an important book because Nightcrawler is sent on a very important mission, but this is also the blue bullshit book.
This is the blue bullshit book. So the thing about Excalibre is that though it replaces Excalibur, there isn't really an Excalibur team equivalent in this book.
Well,
it's really just Nightcrawler doing blue bullshit
and dealing with some characters from the Excalibur book. And yes.
So he's been tasked by Xavier to go find his mom, to then go find a character named Destiny. Destiny, we all know from the 616, is the precognitive who sees the future. She is Mystique's wife in the main Marvel universe here. I think they know of each other, but I didn't get the impression that they were together.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Before we move on, quick blue bullshit definition. Whenever I say blue bullshit, I mean Nightcrawler is blue, Mystique is blue, they're related because they're blue, and everything in their life comes down to other blue characters and people that are dating people that are blue. They're all related. They try to tell us Nightcrawler had a red furry dad, which, you know, ventures into purple bullshit, but blue bullshit. That's what I'm talking about.
But they are holed up in a hidden land called Avalon, which fans of the regular Marvel Universe might know better as the Savage Land.
Yep. Now, your cast of characters, Nightcrawler, Mystique, Switchback, New Girl, Mutant Refugee.
Switchback was created for this crossover and has no 616 equivalent.
And then someone else who you might think is a new character named Kane, but it's not Kane from Spider-Man. It's the Juggernaut wearing a monk outfit.
Yeah, it's the Juggernaut. And he is like a true believer of, you know, Avalon, and he's like a protector and
no
guide.
Helmet. No helmet. I don't like it.
Well, I think I get the impression that the crimson gems that give him his power are that necklace around his neck.
I think so. He's wearing a glowing.
This is more of a, he's kind of a hippy dippy, you know, I just came from Kamar-Taj where Wong's training sorcerers kind of outfit.
Well, he's with these true believers from Avalon who are like, we kind of want to stay out of everything, but people want to get there because it's a safe space. And like, especially human refugees that need to get the hell out. Avalon's a perfect place to go. The only problem is
it's a paradise.
It's very hard to get there and you need teleporters to get there again. We got a teleporter, Nightcrawler, but he's not that kind of teleporter. He teleports himself. He can teleport one or two people, but he's not going to save a bunch of people.
He can teleport. Right. Basically, he's single use, you know, solo trips. Sometimes he can teleport more than one person, but it's hard. It's so hard on him.
Basically, Nightcrawler is set on a fact checking mission. He's got to find Destiny. Why has he got to find Destiny? Her power. She's a precog. She can see the future. So if we're going to find out if Bishop's plan's going to work, Destiny's our girl. Got to go get her. Right. In doing so, Nightcrawler's first got to go talk to Angel, who is like, hey, man, I got my thing going. I don't want to be involved. I'm trying to run my nightclub, do my thing, make a little money. And Nightcrawler's like, don't you remember who you are, you total asshole, and threatens to kill him and stuff. Like, beats the hell out of him. Yeah. This Nightcrawler's not a nice guy. He is hardened.
No. Also, there's a throwaway line here about how Angel's nightclub is called Heaven, and people refer to it as if it were a church.
Right.
And Nightcrawler says, "Oh, that makes me mad. You know how I feel about churches."
He hates it.
Which, so Age of Apocalypse Nightcrawler is not a religious
dude. A religious dude. So to find destiny, first he's got to find his mom, because she's the only one that knows where destiny is. And mom is also the only one that knows how to get to Avalon. This is his mission. Again, we see probably the best drawn Magneto we've seen since Joe Mad. Ken Lashley's Magneto looks awesome.
Magneto looks very good in this.
He's great. Yes. He looks awesome. I think Nightcrawler looks great in this. I
love Nightcrawler's Age of Apocalypse outfit. Yes.
When we do meet Thunderbird, it is a bit of a letdown.
I did a bit of a double take, and I had to double check myself, because this is not Warpath.
No.
From X-Force. This is James Proudstar. Thunderbird. Oh, pardon me. This is John Proudstar.
John Proudstar. Yes.
Thunderbird, who at this time was dead.
So
he died in X-Men 94.
Yep.
And he was still dead to this day. But in the Age of Apocalypse, he is alive.
He's alive, and he's hanging out with a bunch of other Native Americans that are doing kind of a spiritual dance. And Nightcrawler again's like, "I don't like this spiritual bullshit." And he's like, "Chill out, man. What's your problem?" Like, "He'll look, here's the deal. I need to get to the Antarctic, and you're going to get me there, because that's where my blue mom is. And I got some blue bullshit I got to do that involves destiny and the other stuff we talked about." A lot of setup and talking in this issue. I remember liking this one more back in the day. Maybe it's because I loved Excalibur so much and I love Nightcrawler so much. This isn't bad. It feels a little tertiary.
Like, it's got a lot of buildup is the thing.
A lot of buildup.
There's a lot of like hurry up and wait.
But
right?
Also, like, dude, your mission is to go literally fact check if this is going to work or not. That's your mission. Like, why don't we just do it? What could be worse? Now,
that's very fair.
Also, Legion probably said that same thing out loud right before he killed his dad. So, I mean, who knows? This is fun. It looks great. I miss Ken Lashley. I love Ken Lashley so much. This book looks so good, but let's be real. It's probably a skim. It doesn't feel that important to me.
I mean, I would have to see the rest of them to know for sure, but it does feel a little tertiary, but it's full of really cool moments. It's like Danny cool Moonstar moments. Is here. I fucking love Danny Moonstar.
Kind of fun, but yeah, I do too, but it's like, we're doing Native American bullshit. So let's get all the Native Americans on the same page, you know? Okay.
I guess, but yeah. Nightcrawler teleports Thunderbird's thumb off, which is pretty badass. It's
kind of badass.
That was kind of fun.
But again, like, Thunderbird has been dead. This is supposed to be a moment. We're supposed to be like, "Oh shit, that's Thunderbird." And we're like, "Yeah, Nightcrawler just teleported his thumb off, kicked him in the dick, told him the fuck off," you know.
Also, Deadpool is here, and he's kind of like a zombie.
Yeah, Deadpool. So I think this is where Tim Seeley got the idea for the Undeadpool book, him and Carlos Magno did for Age of Revelation, an homage to that, you know. Or
maybe, I mean, they call him Dead Man Wade, and right. It's essentially that, like, his healing factor is so powerful that, like, his body can't do anything else.
Yeah, which is basically what they're kind of doing with him in Undeadpool.
Except for that also has flesh eating.
Right.
But yeah,
there's that. But yeah, this is skimming. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. There's a character here called Damask. I have no idea who that is. I think maybe Damask is a character that has no equivalent.
So there is a 616 Damask that was created by J.M. DeMatteis, character from the Defenders back in the 80s. This is Emma Steed, who was created by Warren Ellis for this book. She worked for the Shadow King. She's a high-ranked assassin. New character. That's all you need to know. Yeah, I don't like to see.
None of that seems familiar to me.
Who cares? Let's move on to our final book, X-Man, number one. This is the one that no one wanted. We had a kick-ass Cable book that was running at the time. It was so good. Cable, Steve Scrooge was drawing it. It was awesome. Jeff Loeb was writing it. There was all manner of weird shit going on in Cable. He was hanging out with, what was his name? Blacksmith, who was like a weird alien looking dude and stuff.
Blacksmith. Yeah, he's Blacksmith is his mentor from the future.
Yes. And now we get a totally different version of Nate Summers. So we'll go over in a second. This is X-Man number one by Jeff Loeb. This is drawn by Steve Skros, inks by Mike Sellers, colors by Mike Thomas, and letters by Richard Starkings. Your team, or the outcasts that he hangs out with, Forge, Toad, Sauron, Mastermind, and Brute, who is one of Sinister's experiments. He's super strong, and he may or may not have been the equivalent of Sunder from the Marvel 616 universe. Their outfits are very similar. I don't know. That's the best I got.
So he's from the Muir Island era, pre-X-Men number one.
The major difference between this Nathan Summers and the Nathan Summers we know is he's never infected with the techno-organic virus. So he is literally the most powerful telepath in the world.
He's the strongest version of Cable that exists. Like, this is what Cable would be if.
Right. If he didn't have to hold back the techno-organic virus.
Oh, also, he is the product of not Scott and Madeline, but Scott and Jean.
Right.
Which, you know, I'm not saying that there's a huge difference that they talk about, but, like, you know.
I'm sure
his mom's DNA is pure and not from a clone.
Easy. Jeez. Oof.
I mean, like, from the original is what I mean.
Take it easy, flat scan. You're starting to sound like Apocalypse over here.
Sorry.
He is running a theater troupe because even in Apocalypse's America, Joe, we got to have theater, man. Like, we got to have something to do, right? So he rolls around with his theater troupe, but secretly he is leading a resistance cell, right? So all these guys in his troupe, they're actually resistance fighters. And he's having all these sort of memories that he can't quite put together of stuff and how it's not actually what it should be. Like, whereas Bishop knows because Bishop's from the future and he's messed up, he may know some things because he's so goddamn telepathically powerful, right? So, like, he has memories of Scott and who's his dad, which he shouldn't even know because he was a baby when all that happened. But we don't know a lot about this character. This character is also much younger than the Cable we were left with in the Marvel Universe.
Well, I think he was like grown in a tube sort of situation, like Impulse or the teenage Superboy. I think that he's got these memories of Cyclops trying to free him from the pens. But, like, he was never a baby. He was just, like, grown in a vat.
Fair.
And then
he
gained sentience as a teen or whatever.
Well, I think he was one of, they're insinuating that he's one of the mutants that was kind of grown to be the next, like, super mutants for Sinister. Sinister was working on.
Sure.
The project for Apocalypse and everything. And that all kind of fell apart. And so now he disappeared and he's off on his own and he's running around. The story opens with a troupe performing a play that subtly mocks Apocalypse. Not a great idea. Just ask Saturday Night Live how that goes. Plays for him every week, right? Forge is there, and he warns. And this Forge, wow, he's a cyborg.
He's definitely a theater major.
I don't know what else to describe him as, but he's a cyborg that is dressed as a wizard.
Sure, he's covered in robot parts.
Yeah, yes. He's got robot hands. They got sharp, spiky fingers and stuff. And everybody's like, they know stuff about him that he doesn't always totally know. Like, he's kind of whacked out and he's trying to figure stuff out. And all the other theater troops, they're like, we're in on it. We know what's up. Toad, by the way, another extreme redesign.
Yeah. And so this theater troupe, they're actually like delivering supplies to refugees and stuff. So the theater troupe is like a front.
They are a secret cell. Yeah, definitely. But they know Nate and he doesn't seem to know a lot. So it seems like you keep saying he was like grown in a tube, but I feel like he was taken for a while and maybe experimented on and then got out.
Well, no, he was created by Mr. Sinister. So he probably does remember. He probably does have hazy memories of like life in the like life as a lab specimen.
Fair enough.
And so, yeah, like, I don't think you're wrong there. But he was created in a lab by Mr. Sinister using the DNA of Cyclops and Jean Grey.
Yeah, and Forge's theater troupe is like slowly figuring out how powerful this guy is, like little by little.
Right, and as the book progresses, you get some stuff about how like Sinister views him as a son. Like he's sort of like a paternal figure, even though he's this obviously fucked up super villain eugenicist dad. Yeah. But there's a lot of like affection Sinister has. If Sinister can have affection towards anybody, it's X-Man.
Yeah. And so he's sending someone to get X-Man back. Of course, our friend Domino, who is a she's in red. I'll say that. And she has lots of swords.
Not high on the list of redesigns in this event, but no. I mean, I've seen worse.
Yeah, not as bad. I honestly like it better than the latest Domino redesign they're doing.
She looks like she could be one of the externals. I'll tell you that much.
Kind of. This book, way more fun than I remember it being.
Yeah, it's good.
Way more fun than I remember this being. And they are definitely playing that, like, Nate, while he is removed and really doesn't remember a lot of stuff and doesn't seem to want any part of anything, is going to be a part of it whether he likes it or not. And I very much like that there's so many X-Men villains here that get a chance to do some heroic shit. Like, Sauron's a good guy.
Yeah, Toad, right?
That's fun.
There's a great cliffhanger where a character shows up, and like, you and I know, obviously, that this character is Mr. Sinister in disguise.
Sure,
but
sure.
Like, the idea of Mr. Sinister as knowing his name is Nathaniel Essex. Like, yeah, those books were out, but it wasn't as like obvious common knowledge to comic readers as it was as it is now, like during the Krakoan era.
Sure,
and stuff.
Sure. This was back.
So when Mr. Sinister shows up calling himself Essex, you're like, well, who's this now?
Well, not just that. This is before, like, when a character that had a diamond on their head, like, I don't know. It could just be maybe a bad guy. I don't know. But now if anybody shows up with a red diamond or a black,
you definitely know that it's something to do with Sinister.
But better yet, anyone shows up with any card, you know, symbol on their
any playing card suit. Yeah,
don't
right,
trust exactly. them. Just kill them as fast as you can.
Yes, exactly.
Steve Scrooge. But
this book's
here,
this book's good. The art is fantastic.
I love Steve Scrooge so much. I love him.
I said this to Matt over text. I read this today and I was like, man, X-Men number one is really good.
It's great.
And
it is great.
I said, I miss loving Jeff Loeb.
I do too. I miss this Jeff.
And that's all I'm gonna say, you know.
Sure.
People change, styles change, but this was Jeff Loeb at the height of his powers.
So another thing that I miss, and I think completely wasted, this version of Nate Gray is so cool. I love this version of the character.
And this version of the character is so popular. Now, I know that they must have had it planned because obviously they plan way ahead.
Sure.
But, all of the X books, all of the Age of Apocalypse books ended after four issues. Right. And then it went to X-Men Omega and then everything went back to normal. However, in addition to Cable's book resuming, X-Man continued with a number five. And he found himself in the 616.
Yeah.
And that's how we got Nate Gray from the Age of Apocalypse into the 616.
I love it.
And so this book continues on with the same creative team for a while.
Yeah.
And it's still fucking good.
And there's a Cable book running.
And there's also a Cable book. And so obviously there's drama. There's drama there.
Yeah. Oh, man, I miss this character. And I think, look, I love Cable, but I do think they missed a chance to kill the Cable character for a while. Of course, everybody comes back, but kill him and just have this character.
I mean, they kind of tried that with Kid Cable.
No.
A few years ago.
No. Not Kid Cable.
I'm just saying, but they did. Yeah, like, they killed Cable and replaced him with Kid Cable.
Ugh, I don't need no Kid Cable. This was great, but this book's great. It's super important. Like, this was the one back in the day that I fought. And I was like, all right, I'll read the first issue. And I read it and was like, oh, shit, this kicks ass.
It's good, man. It's good. Nate Gray is one of, I believe, just three Age of Apocalypse characters that survive and find themselves in the 616.
Dark Beast.
Sugar Man. And Dark Beast.
Holocaust, dude. Holocaust came across.
No, I think Holocaust just existed. Like, Holocaust.
Oh, that's right.
Around.
We already had this discussion. It's a
because
different
he's
character.
The son of something.
But
he's
his
son of a pop.
His name is Nemesis, and he's a different character.
No, we had it all backwards because Genesis is
not Abel's Genesis.
Kid.
Nemesis,
right? Because at first his name was Holocaust.
Yes,
and then they changed it to Genocide. I think now his name is Genocide.
I thought it was Nemesis. Is what they changed it.
It might. It maybe it's now. Now it's Nemesis. He was an heir of Apocalypse.
Regardless.
But, yeah. No. So I remember very distinctly. During Executioner's Song, there was a one shot that came out called Strike Files. And it was basically bios of all of the characters written from the perspective of Strife, the evil clone of Cable. One of those characters is Holocaust. And we never see him again until the Age of Apocalypse.
Good Lord. Yeah. That character had a different name. The Nemesis I'm thinking of is William Rolfson. Who looks just like him,
that is.
But is not the same character. Doesn't matter.
I love
this book.
Holocaust's backstory is confusing.
I love this book. I love Steve Scrooge. I will say, do not love the way he draws Apocalypse. Don't love it.
Apocalypse has very luscious lips.
He does.
Very kissable.
Yeah. Uncomfortably so.
Uncomfortably luscious.
I don't like the way it makes me feel in certain parts of my body.
There's your pull quote, Marvel. Uncomfortably luscious. Says the two-headed nerd.
So X-Man, a buy it. Let's just do a quick recap.
Yeah, man, it's awesome.
Let's do a quick recap here. So X-Man, we'll go in reverse order. We gave it a buy it. We really liked it. Excalibre. Sure felt a little tacked on. Not bad, but a skim it.
A little skim it. Strong
sure.
Skim it.
Weapon X, we loved. Unabashedly loved. Just
fuck yeah.
Couldn't get enough of it. Generation Next, we loved it. More, please. So good.
Yes.
Gambit and the Externals, surprisingly fun.
Surprisingly fun, but if I didn't read it, I wouldn't feel like I missed out on it.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I'm not going to say I loved as much the other ones. Factor X, meh. Kind of a meh.
Factor X is a comic book.
Yeah. Factor X, Astonishing X-Men and Amazing X-Men, outstanding, just outstanding.
Especially Astonishing X-Men, because you can't beat that Joe Madder era. It's just so incredible.
So just reading these first issues, like we did for the Age of Revelation, I think we are off to a way better start here, and mainly because it all feels completely intertwined. Like all these guys were in the same room when they came up with these ideas is what it feels like.
Yeah. For as sprawling as it is, right? It is still a lot of parts in a lot of different titles. It is pretty much contained to the books we had at the time.
Yeah.
With like rare exceptions. I think there was like one miniseries that was two issues or no, there was X-Men Unlimited, which was the quarterly book that Marvel came up with at the time. I think X-Men Unlimited was replaced by a book called the X Chronicles or
X Chronicles. I think you're right.
X Universe, something like that.
It was like X Chronicles.
And that was essentially like kind of an anthology. Like, here's what's going on with like, hey, are you curious about what's going on with Bruce Banner and Matt Murdock while Apocalypse is ruling America? Here you go.
Yeah. You got a peek if you wanted it. It was there. Here's a peek.
But you don't need it. You don't need it. Right.
But today,
all of the main books are pretty tied in, man. They're locked in.
Yeah. And I think it's a good choice to keep it contained like this and make it feel important. So even if you, like we were saying, like, I wasn't going to read this, but there is some, like, even Factor X, there's some stuff in there. It's like, well, this is interesting. And guess what? Kid who loves Cyclops, I read them all because I had to, because once again, I was like, maybe they're going to make Cyclops do the right thing and he won't fuck everything up this time. Well, he almost does. But it's just a better marching order and things are different today. I get it. But do we really need this many one shot.
I mean, Marvel would continue to learn all of the worst lessons.
Of course.
If some are good, then more must be better.
True. So far,
and
though,
that's not always the case.
Age of Apocalypse, I'm saying, so far, it's ahead in this race. We'll do a check-in the end, but so far.
It rules, man. Oh, wait, are we going to keep going? Or what's happening? What do you mean we're going to check in the end?
I mean, when this is all said and done, we're going to...
You want to do like a post-game wrap-up kind of thing?
Yeah, I already
thing?
Tried. We're doing a TLDR. We're going to go in and we're going to say...
That means you have to read them all.
I'm already on board for that. I already told you. You're making me do this now, but...
You told me that I was on my own.
Well, you know... I lied. I've been reading them. We're going to see.
Age of Apocalypse, though, fucking rules.
Who did the age better? It's coming. We'll see what happens.
Excelsior! Oh.
That is it for THN 796. Next week, we are taking a break for Turkey Day, a.k.a. American Thanksgiving.
I don't celebrate bullshit Thanksgiving anymore.
Those just like Canadians had it already.
Just like iced tea.
but we'll be back with the new comic show featuring reviews of 8 new comics the following week. If you need more THN in the meantime, follow the link at twitternerd.com and join our Discord. Then join us for the THN Gang Hang on Saturdays at 11 o'clock Central Time.
Do not forget to like and subscribe or write a review or give us a star or comment on our videos if you're watching us on
YouTube.
Slap
that bell. Get in the chat, fam. It's bussin'.
Okay, stop that. It's important.
No cap.
And it helps us get in front of other listeners who are interested in listening to two morons that used to manage a comic book store and never grew up or stopped reading comics and want to talk about it to no end.
In a complete failure to thrive scenario, we did not learn how to adapt to modern times because I have no idea if I used any of that slang correctly.
I hope you didn't, and I don't want you to hear you do it again. So...
THN is a listener-supported podcast, and it would not be possible without the generosity of donors like our longtime patron, Amy from North Dakota. Thank you, Amy. If you like what you hear every week and want access to exclusive THN content, it's easy to support the show just like Amy does. You can sign up to be a patron at patreon.com/twoheadednerd.
Before we go, this episode's shout-out goes to our buddy, Mr. Frankenstein Cirillo. We're assuming that is his full name, and his lovely bride,
it's a legal name, yeah.
Jen, who are celebrating 20 years of wedded bliss this week. Mazel tov, you crazy kids. It's also Casey and I's anniversary tomorrow, so don't tell her. I'm pretty sure she forgot.
Well, hearing it on this show will mean nothing to
her. Oh, you think she listens to this show? Really?
Yeah, I'm just saying. Congratulations on doing the bare minimum of effort. Until next time, true believers, remember to pre-order your comics or your retailer might just accuse your slang of being a little sus. This is the Two-Headed Nerd, signing off.
6'7", motherfucker.
Whatever the fuck that means. I literally have no clue what that means. I don't know what that means.